Good morning. There's an old saying that goes, those who can do and those who can't teach. This is the greatest insult to teachers that ever was uttered. For it assumes that the reason they teach what they teach is because they're no good at doing it. This is a stereotype that preachers sometimes face as well. For some reason, people have a tendency to believe that if someone is a preacher, it's because he has failed at everything else. In many instances, this could be true. Sometimes it may be that a preacher can do certain things, but they're no different than anyone else. Maybe one person is good at something and not good at something else. Many assume that since he's a preacher, he's good at talking about the Bible, but couldn't change a light bulb without calling in a lifeline. Those of you who aren't teachers and preachers might be smiling. However, you're not off the hook. For if you are a Christian, the world looks at you as though you are weak, especially if you're a man. When in reality, the opposite is true. I wonder how many souls have been lost because of weak men who weren't strong enough to remain faithful to God. Those men who cower under the thought of having to be the spiritual leader of their family. Those spineless men who hide in the shadows and allow their wives to take the leadership role in the spiritual battle. Their pride and arrogance wouldn't allow them to stomach the thought of others thinking they were weak because they believed in God. And they therefore show their true weakness by ignoring Him. It takes a stronger man to take a stand for God than it does to ignore Him. Believe it or not, some people in the world look at Jesus as though he was weak. Perhaps it is because of the pictures that are depicted of Jesus, always depicting him as having perfectly clear skin, always depicting him of having beautiful white garments and very, very soft and feminine features. Perhaps those pictures maybe holding a little lamb in his arms. In fact, with the exception of the images of Jesus on the cross, he is always depicted as being meek and passive. While I believe those pictures are accurate, I believe that there is a side of Jesus that they fail to bring forth. Matthew chapter 11 and verse 29. Matthew chapter 11 and verse 29. Jesus says in this passage, "Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls." What a comforting passage that is. I guess this is where we get the idea that Jesus is meek and passive, for sure. For some reason, people believe that meekness is not very manly. The title of the lesson this morning is, "I can be a man of God and still be a man." Or you can turn it around. Can I be a man of God and still be a man? Many view meekness as weakness when in reality the opposite is true. In fact, meekness means power under control. When talking about meekness, oftentimes to describe it to someone so that they can fully comprehend the meaning of meekness, they use a horse. A horse is that animal that they can control with a bridle. They keep him under control, and they can take a rope and they can just put one loop around a post, and that horse will stay there and he won't go, but he's got the power to pull the rope, the post, everything loose. In fact, the very vehicle that man has used to travel to the moon has an engine in it that is measured by horsepower. We use horsepower to measure power. And yet power under control is said is meekness. That is what meekness is. It took a lot of control for Jesus to go to the cross, knowing that he had enough power to call down 10,000 angels and yet never open his mouth. Why is it that godly men often get the unfortunate accusation of not being manly? Consider Abraham. Look at Genesis chapter 18, And Genesis chapter 18, Abraham, he was a man of God, and yet he still proved himself to be a man. Genesis 18, verses 17 through 19. Genesis 18, verses 17 through 19. Here God has come down to destroy the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah for their evil, sinful ways, and for their immoral acts, and their open immorality. And God is coming down to destroy them because of the wickedness that they were enveloped in. Genesis chapter 18, beginning in verse 17. And the Lord said, "Shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." This passage shows what kind of man Abraham was. It's interesting that God says of Abraham, "I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him." It's interesting that God says that about Abraham, who at this point is already an old man and doesn't have any children. God already has a plan in place, and he knows that Abraham is his guy. As an old man, he knows he's his guy. He's going to be a manly man. He's going to step up. He's going to do what needs to be done. It doesn't really show, however, that Abraham is a manly man. It just shows that he is a godly man, this passage anyway. But there is a story related in Genesis chapter 14 where five kings came in, where the five kings, the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, they all joined forces, and they came in, and they were overthrown and defeated by four other kings. Now, when these were overcome and defeated by these four kings, this was at the time when Lot, who was Abraham's nephew, was living in the land of Sodom. The four kings came, and when they overcame, they took of the spoils of the land. They took what was good. They took what was theirs, what they had earned from their conquering of that land. One of which was Lot and his family and all of his possessions. They took all that they had, and they headed across the land. They took the spoils of battle, and they left with those spoils of battle. Now listen to Genesis chapter 14, verses 13 through 16. Genesis chapter 14, verses 13 through 16, it says, "And there came one that had escaped and told Abraham, the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner, and these were confederate with Abram. And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, and he and his servants by night, and smote them, and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot, and his goods, and the women also, and the people." This may not seem like it shows Abraham to be a manly man, but consider this. Four kingdoms just joined forces and defeated five other kingdoms, and Abraham goes after them with 318 men. Sounds like a pretty manly move, doesn't it? How many other relatives of any of the other people went after them? How many of the remainder of the people in the cities decided to chase after the soldiers that just defeated them? Nobody. Abraham just gathers the people from his household. So let's go. We got to go get my nephew and bring him back. And he didn't just go get Lot and say, "Come on, I'm taking Lot. Y'all don't like it? Too bad." No, he defeated those people, brought Lot back, and brought back all the other captives that they had taken. Abraham was a man of God, yet he was still a man. He was a man, and he manned up. Well, let's fast forward a little bit to the man Moses. We all know that Moses was a man of God, right? In fact, a lot of times when you start asking about names, about different people, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all of those, some people don't recognize those names, but most people recognize the name of Moses. Who was Moses? Well, sometimes it's very easy to see that that Moses was a man of God. Other times it may look like he's almost rebellious in some of the ways he acts, but what kind of man was Moses anyway? Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3, If we look at Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3, it tells us exactly what Moses was like. Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3 says, "Now the man Moses was very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth." That's a pretty interesting title right there, to say he was very meek above all the people on the earth, above everybody on the whole planet. Remember what we said about meekness, power under control. Moses' life was one of turmoil. He was born into a time when the Hebrew male children were all being killed by an evil Pharaoh or an evil king, Egyptian king. When he was born, his mother took one look at him and she couldn't allow him to be killed by this Egyptian king. So she hid him for about 3 months, as long as she could. And then she made a box out of wood. They call it an ark. And a lot of times people will say something about how many animals did Moses take into the ark? And you're like, "Oh, I don't know, two." No, Moses wasn't on an ark. Well, actually, Moses was on an ark, because when he was a baby, his mother put him in an ark that she made of wood and pitched it within and without with pitch, and put it in the river among the bulrushes and sent it down the river. Okay, we know the story. He didn't take any animals on the ark. He was on there by himself as a little baby. So Moses got put on the ark. This is where his life story begins. It started off early on. He started with challenges facing him from the start. I don't think there's anybody that I know that has ever had a hit on him. In other words, I don't know anybody who had a tag on him to be killed. Somebody had a hit out on him and they were going to kill him. Moses had a hit on himself on him before he was even born. He was already determined to be killed. They were determined to kill him. She couldn't hide him anymore. She puts him in the river where he was picked up by the daughter of that same evil Pharaoh who wanted all the children killed. She raised him. She educated him by the best of the scholars of the Egyptians. He was brought up under the Egyptian teachers and scholars. When he grew up, however, he still wanted to be with God's people more than he wanted to be with Pharaoh's people. He recognized his place and he was faithful to God. He didn't really know who God was at this point. He didn't know God very well, but he knew his place. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 24 and 25. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 and 25. This is a hindsight verse. This is actually his looking back. It says, "By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season." Okay, so that again is in the book of Hebrews, and that Hebrew writer is looking back and giving you, showing you those champions of faith, Moses of which is one. And he looks back and says, Moses, by faith, when he was come to years, he got to the age of accountability, and he realized he did not want to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter as much as he wanted to be God's man. Moses had it made as an adopted Egyptian. However, he chose to live with God's people instead. When I think of Moses, I think of him as an old man. I see an old man with a long beard, long hair. Perhaps he's holding the staff and parting the waters of the Red Sea, or perhaps he's on the mountain and he's standing before God with the tablets of the Ten Commandments. Whatever picture you have in your mind of Moses, 99 times out of 100, he's an old guy. He's got long hair, long gray. He's an old guy. We see him. That's the way many look at him. Perhaps it's because he was 80 years old when he brought the Israelites out of Egyptian bondage. I don't think that we've ever seen any pictures of Moses that the artist made him look young. He always looked old. Even when he was at the burning bush, he would already been old in there. So we don't know. He's old. Every time we see him, looked old. But what about the part where Moses was manly? There are many, however, I'm sure. Let's look at this one, Exodus chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. Exodus chapter 2, verses 16 and 17. How manly was Moses? He was a man of God, we know that. But you think about it, he was the leader of 3 million people. He brought anywhere from 2 to 3 million people out of the land of Egypt, and he was the leader of them. When they came to him, he gave them the answers. When they had a problem, he settled the disputes. He was a manly man. Exodus chapter 2, verse 16 and 17. "Now the priests of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock." Moses was man enough to take a stand against these shepherds who were taking advantage of the fact that these young girls were all alone and didn't have anybody to help them. So they'd run them off, "Y'all get out of here." And they would water their own flocks first. What would happen was, is these young girls, the father, priest of Midian would send his daughters out. They would go to one of their flocks. They'd have to wait, and the shepherds would come in, and they would run them off, and then they would water their own flocks, and they would leave. And sometime they'd come back, and somebody else would run them off, and they had to wait. And they were always late getting home. They were always late getting home because they were the last ones to get to water their sheep because these shepherds were bullying them into getting out of the way. Moses sees that and it's not fair, and he stops it. It didn't say Moses was one guy, then he got in a fight with one other guy. It's the shepherds that were running them off. He stopped them. He says, y'all leave here, and he ran them off. Whatever he said, I don't know what he said, but he ran them off. He stopped that. Moses took a stand because he was a manly man. God handpicked Moses because he needed a man who would stand up and be a man and act like a man and go into Egypt to the Egypt and bring the Israelites out that were being held captive there. And he does that. He sends Moses in. He needed someone who would stand up against the Pharaoh. If you sometimes find yourself doubting whether you can take a stand for God or not, maybe you find the doubt. Don't feel bad, because if you look at Moses, he too was skeptical. There was times that he had doubts as to whether God could use him or not. He wondered about those things. Like, I'm not the guy. You sure I'm the one you want? And he wasn't sure. So don't feel bad if you feel doubts, if you think that you can't be the man that God expects you to be. Just step up and man up and do it. Because as men, we're supposed to be godly men. And that's what all the examples we have in the Bible are. They were godly men. We look back through the pages of the written word, we find many servants of God who took a stand. They spoke up against the sinful practices that were going on. They spoke up against sinful people. They spoke up for God when there was no gain for them possible. When there's nothing they could possibly gain, they still stood up, they still spoke up, and they were God's people. It takes strength and courage to stand up for God. Unfortunately, many never find the strength even to be a Christian, much less take a stand for God. Some people just don't want to do it. Go away, go thy way. When I have a convenient time, I'll call for you. Almost you persuaded me to be a Christian. I just don't know. I don't know if I want to buy into all that. I don't know what most people don't want to become a Christian because they don't want to change their life. Most people don't want to submit to the commands of God because it's going to change their lifestyle. Even their religious lifestyle may change, and they don't want to accept that. They like things the way they are. I'm a person that likes things the same way. I park in the same place all the time. I keep my stuff in the same place. I'm a creature of habit. I don't like change. There came a time when I looked at the Bible and I said, I've got to change. I've got to do what God wants me to do. I've got to follow this. We have to take a stand. We look through the pages, we see that it takes strength and courage to stand up for God. Joshua chapter, if you turn with me to Joshua chapter 1, Joshua chapter 1, if you remember who Joshua was Moses' military commander. He was right there with Moses. Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 through 7, a bit of a long read, but let's look at Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you. As I said unto Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coasts. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of your life. Now listen to this. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be thou strong and of good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Listen to this. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand nor to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. God doesn't tell Joshua, you're going to have to be a strong man because there's going to be a lot of opposition there. You're going to have to be a strong man because the soldiers of the land are powerful. You're going to have to be strong because they have chariots of iron. He says, you're going to have to be strong because you're going to have to keep the ordinances of God. It's going to take strength to be a godly man and to follow through the way Moses, my servant, did. That's what he says right there. Be thou strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance. Be strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. From everything we know about Joshua, he was a strong, manly man. He was Moses' most trusted companion. We all think of Joshua, the military leader. We think he was just a soldier. He was a military leader. However, many people don't know it, but Joshua was a godly man as well. He was godly enough that God just handed over the reins to him to take over and lead the people that he had groomed Moses to do. And Moses has been leading these people. And now he turns it over to Joshua. You're the one. When Moses died, do you think the people are saying, now what are we going to do? Now who's going to lead us? Now who's going to help us? We never made it to the promised land. Who's going to get us there? They didn't have to ask that. Those questions never came up. Before they could even come up, God calls Joshua and says, this is what's going to happen. You're going to go in there and you're going to take those people in. You're going to lead the people in there and you're going to divide the land and you're going to give it to them as the promise I gave to their forefathers. Now, most people don't realize it, but Joshua even went up onto Mount Sinai when Moses went up there to get the Ten Commandments. We all see the pictures, Moses up on the mountain by himself, but actually Joshua went with him up there. Not even Aaron the high priest, the brother of Moses, went up there, but Joshua did. Exodus chapter 24 and verse 13. Exodus chapter 24 and verse 13. And Moses rose up and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up into the Mount of God. Now, most people look at that and they say, see, Moses and Joshua rose up, but only Moses went to the mountain. That's not true, because we'll see later on where Moses was up, Joshua was up there with him. In fact, when they were coming back down with the Ten Commandments, the people were celebrating the fact that they had just made this golden calf. We all know the story. They tossed in their earrings. They told Aaron, make us a god that we can say this. God brought us out of Egypt. And he says, toss in your earrings. They tossed in the earrings, made this golden calf out of in the fire. Aaron shaped it out, molded it in the shape of a calf for them, and behold, there's a God that brought you out of Egypt. Moses and Joshua are coming down the mountain, and they hear the celebration going on. And Joshua first thinks there's war in the camp. We've been under attack. We left for a while, we come back, and we're under attack. And you look at this, Exodus chapter 32 and verse 17. Exodus chapter 32 and verse 17. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said unto Moses, there is the noise of war in the camp. Not only was Joshua a manly man, Joshua was a man of war, and yet he was the first one that God called on to lead his people. I think many men today get things confused. They think that I can either be manly or I can be godly, and I'd rather be manly because it's inherent in me, or whatever the case may be. Sometimes they may wassail back and forth, can't figure out which way to be, which road to be on. We barely scratch the surface of the men of God, that the men that God used to be men of God and still be men. Have you considered David? I thought about this lesson. I thought, how many men in the Bible are listed that are shown to be good, strong, godly men and strong, manly men? And many, many came to my mind. But consider David. We talked about Moses a little bit. Moses was fighting for his life from the day he was born. David, here's a guy who was a man of God before he was even a man. He was still just a lad feeding his father's sheep when he was given the orders by his father to take some provisions to his brothers who were on the battle line. They were on the front line of the battle. A young boy, 14, 15, see, we don't know how old he was. A young lad of that age would have been interested in those things. He looked up to his brothers. You ever see a 12 or 11 or 12-year-old boy when he has a 19-year-old brother that's in the military and that brother comes home from the military and see how that boy acts? He looks up to his big brother. He wants to be just like him. Now, we see here that David was sent to the battle line where his brothers were. They were fighting for King Saul against the Philistines. And David complied. He took the victuals to his brothers, like his father had said, to check on them. And if you picture this scene, he travels by way of a cart or a carriage, if you will. He would add a driver. They're traveling along. They get close to the battle lines, and he can hear the battle cries. He can hear the sound of war. He can hear the sound of the battle and the yells and the screams, and he can hear that. And it's exciting to him, and he jumps off of this carriage, and he takes off running. And he runs, and he greets his brothers. He's excited about seeing them. It's an interesting picture. He's done nothing wrong. At least in his own eyes, he's carrying out orders. However, once he got there, he starts talking with his brothers and the other soldiers. And listen to what happened. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 23 and 24. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 23 and 24. Now, mind you, David was still a young lad, it says. He is but a youth. He is still a kid in everybody's eyes. We don't know how old he was. Some say, well, he's probably under 30. That's all that matters. He's maybe 25, 27. I don't know. He might have been 14, 15. He is a youth. We picture him as a kid, but we don't know. He's a youth. He's considered a youth. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 23 and 24. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion of the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and he spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And the men of Israel, when they saw the man, they fled from him and were sore afraid. Now it says when Goliath, I'm jumping into the middle where it's verse 23 of chapter 17, so I haven't given you all the information, but basically what it says, he spoke as according to the same words. He had stepped up, this giant would step up into the middle of the battlefield, and he would stand up and he would challenge the armies of God. If there's a soldier among you who can take me, send him out here. I'll rip him apart. I'll feed him to the fowls of the air. Bring it on. What do you got? And the people would cower down. And this Philistine giant, and he was a giant. He was not like the rest of the Philistines who were normal-sized people. This guy was a giant. He would step out there and he would challenge him again. Well, it just so happens about the time that David arrives and he jumps off the chariot or the carriage and he runs over to greet his brothers and he's talking to the soldiers. All of a sudden, here comes this voice. Is there any among the Jewish people that can take me? And he turns and he sees this Philistine giant out there challenging God's people. And he's standing out there. These were Israelite soldiers, and they were afraid of this giant of a man who had already stepped forth and challenged the people. However, until David the shepherd boy arrived, there was no one that was willing to accept the challenge. David is a shepherd boy. David was conversing with the soldiers when his brother overheard it. Listen to this, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 28 and 29. Now remember again, David was there because he was following the orders of his father. 1 Samuel 17, 28 and 29, it says, "And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle." Now, you have to understand what Eliab heard him saying was, he heard David talking with the other soldiers and says, "What's going to be done to this man? What's going to be done to the guy that defeats him? What is the king going to do to the guy that defeats him?" And they said, "Well, surely he will give him a place of prominence and give him his daughter for his wife, and he's going to be given all these things." They told him about all the things. And when Eliab, the older brother, heard him saying it, he reprimanded him. He said, "You got a naughty mind. You're nosy. You just came up here just to see what was going on." That's what his brother accuses him of. David listens to Eliab's accusation and just kind of shrugs him up and turns around and keeps on talking with those guys. He shrugged it off. Those soldiers in turn told Saul what Saul the king told Saul what David had said about their conversation with David. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 32 and 33. 1 Samuel 17, verses 32 and 33. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight. You can't go and fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth." Okay, so those soldiers told Saul what David was saying, and Saul sent for David. And he called him up and says, what's going on? He goes, "Don't worry about it. I'll go and I'll fight this Philistine." He's not a soldier. He hasn't been through basic training. He hasn't been through all of that soldier training. But he said, "Don't worry about it, King. I'll go fight the Philistine." Saul's lack of confidence did not dissuade him from wanting to fight the Philistine giant. In fact, David tells Saul a story about how he's already killed a lion and a bear. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 37. 1 Samuel 17, verse 37. And David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the hand," and pay attention to that right there, "the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said unto David, "Go, and the Lord be with thee." Saul could see that there was no change in David's mind. He's going to go up, and he's thinking to himself, "We've got an army of men here that are too cowardly to step up against this guy. They won't go to battle against him. And this boy's fixing to go up there. They're going to tear him limb from limb. They're going to tear him apart." We know how the story ends. David goes out and he kills the champion of the Philistine, the 9-foot-tall, battle-hardened warrior, and he kills him with a sling and a stone, buried it in his forehead. Then he cuts off his head and brings it back to the king. The Philistines were defeated and they fled from the armies of Israel who pursued after them. They fled because their giant was killed. David was more of a man than everyone on that battle line, including the king. He was more of a man than the Philistine giant Goliath because he was a man of God. David, first and foremost, was a man of God. How do you suppose David's brother treated him after that? You think Eliab reprimanded him anymore? He just killed the giant that they were afraid of. We may never know, but we do know that David knew exactly where his power came from. He never once thought that he had escaped the paw of the lion or the paw of the bear because of his own power, nor did he think that he could take that Philistine giant on his own accord. The only way it was going to happen is with God, and he knew that God would deliver him. He was a man of God. He called on the Lord with faith, and then he gave the glory to God afterwards. As David grew up, he became the greatest king the Israelites ever knew. And when the time came to build the temple of God, David was not allowed because he had shed too much blood. 1 Chronicles 22, 7 and 8. However, God said that it would be Solomon who built the temple. Okay, so David wanted to build a temple to God, but he was too much of a soldier. He had shed too much blood. God says, "You're not going to build the temple. Your son Solomon will build the temple." And so David washes his hands of it and walks away and says, "Fine, let Solomon do it." No, that's not what happened. In fact, David hands the reins over very professionally and very godly to his son Solomon. When David passes that torch, he encourages his son Solomon to be a man and a man up to the task. 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, it says, "Now the days of David drew near that he should die. And he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be thou strong therefore and show thyself a man." David calls his son, this is a manly man. He's a manly enough man. He killed a lion and a bear before he was a grown man. He killed the Goliath giant before he was a grown man. And now he tells his son, be strong and man up. Show thyself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord thy God to walk in his ways. What does it mean to be a man? Keep the charge of the Lord thy God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes and to keep his commandments and his judgments and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that thou mayest prosper in all that thou doest and whithersoever thou turnest thyself. What an amazing charge. What does he tell them? Oh, you just need to man up and just go on about your life. Most people today think that they can teach their kid to go out and do crazy things, and then that's being manly. Even David, who was a man of war, was still a man after God's own heart. And he tells his son, this is what you need to do. God tells David, your son Solomon is going to build the temple. And so David says, okay, I need to talk to him. There's something I got to say to him before I die. Be thou strong, therefore, and show thyself a man. I look around this country and I see a bunch of spineless men whose wives basically control them. No, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. Guys, if you're a man of God and you take the spiritual leadership role that God intended for you to take, perhaps your wives would respect you more. Ladies, if you think this sermon is not about you because it didn't pertain to you because it's about being a man, then you need to think again. Because ladies, God gave you a role to be the helpmeet for your husbands. You need to stand up for him and you need to let him be that man that he needs to be. Many men don't take that leadership role because they've been browbeat and henpecked. Men, you need to stand up and be the man. Be the man of God. Put God first in everything. God gave you a role, ladies. Don't belittle your husband. Don't make him think that there's something wrong with being manly. Let him be a man. Support him the way God intended. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18. And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him. That word helpmeet, that phrase right there, helpmeet, means to stand beside. Ladies, stand beside your man. And guys, it's time to man up and be the spiritual leaders of your family that God intended for you to be. We're in a spiritual decline in our country because it is not being able to be carried out by the women of this country, and the men are too spineless to step up. Not all, don't get me wrong. A lot of men are stepping up, and a lot of men are standing up, and a lot of men are manning up. But there's a lot of them that still aren't, and a lot of them that are taking secondary roles, and they're hiding in the shadows, and they're letting their wives run the families, or they're not even doing it at all. They're not even encouraging their children. Then they grow up and their children are teenagers and they run off and leave the Lord or have no belief in God and they don't understand why. Let's take a stand. Let's man up and let's be God's men like the men of God that we read about in Scriptures. We are called to be manly men and to be godly men. God designed us and created us in His own image. That means whatever we are, however we act, there's a part of us that's the way God is. And we can act like that and we can be godly men and still be men. If you have any need, if you haven't obeyed the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, perhaps it's time to make some changes in your life. Perhaps it's time to step up and to make those changes and devote yourself and devote your life to God and dedicate your life to Christ. I've seen soldiers in our own military, battle-worn soldiers. They've been through basics. They've been shipped all the way across to the other side of the world. And I've seen them holding hands in pictures and bowing their heads and saying a prayer to God. I hate to tell you this, those are the most manly men on our planet. Our soldiers that are over fighting overseas and putting their life at risk every day, leaving their families, coming back missing limbs, coming back missing all kinds of things, missing their children growing up, and they're praying to God while they're over there. Let's step up and let's become manly men and let's be the kind of people that God wants us to be. The message is yours. Won't you come while together we stand and sing the song that's been selected?